All right, guys, pictures up.
Pictures up.
Pictures up.
Let's roll sound.
Rolling.
Rolling.
Sound speeds.
Camera speeds. Two. Asham, take two. Mark.
Set up.
Set.
And action.
Welcome to the Penn Cinema Podcast, your behind-the-curtain connection for movie news and reviews. Now, here are your hosts, Penn Ketchum and David Moulton.
Welcome to the show. I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
What's up? Man, welcome back to the show, Penn. You ready to do another quick 90?
Another quick 90. So David and I were talking last night about when we were going to record today, and he said, when do you want to record tomorrow? And I said, wait, we're still doing this? I thought the deal was 90 episodes and out.
Yeah, you know, I said, why don't we just do another quick 90?
Yeah, so we're going to do another quick 90 episodes and reconvene. 90 episodes is what? Just about, not quite 2 years, 2 years from now.
Right.
Yeah. Which will be right around the time they release the new James Bond movie.
a couple months before.
And they'll be discussing when Avatar 2 is going to come out. It won't be coming out in 90 weeks. No. I'm saying there will be discussing. We should do like a podcast. This is so ridiculous. We should do a podcast time capsule. And like predict what are we gonna, I don't want to do it today because I want to like be able to give it some thought.
Okay,
but next week we're gonna do the Penn Cinema Podcast time capsule, and we are going to predict what will be on the show in 90 weeks. And I want to be the first to say, I guarantee we're still going to be trying to decide when Avatar 2 is coming out.
No doubt. At least it's finished filming. I mean.
Yeah, but it's only a matter of time until James Cameron decides, well, actually, I think I'm going to go back in and tweak the sound to edit.
Is James Cameron George Lucas gone mad?
Oof. Who do we like better, James Cameron or George Lucas? Oof. Well, I put Christopher Nolan ahead of both of them. What? What? What did that? Yeah,
you don't like to hear your movies, I guess, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. If I could only watch one director's films for the rest of my life, it would definitely be Christopher Nolan.
That's intense right there.
I don't know, maybe Scorsese or Spielberg. Spielberg, okay. Probably.
All right, yeah, Spielberg.
Yeah, right. Spielberg. Because the reason why I would right away go with Spielberg is because even more so than Christopher Nolan, Spielberg has a wide variety of credits.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You can't necessarily tell. I mean, once you know it, you can. But it's not super obvious that this is, quote unquote, a Spielberg movie.
Right. Yeah. Because they're so varied. It's not like,
right.
Oh, yeah, I know this filmmaker. Yeah.
So I think Christopher Nolan is my favorite director. But if I could only watch one director for the rest of my life, I'd probably go with Spielberg.
That's intense. Me.
Where are you at?
Oh, I don't even know.
Who's directing Dune?
Denis Villeneuve.
Oh, that's right. Denis Villeneuve.
Yeah.
Villanova. Let's just call him Villanova.
Villanova. Denis Villanova. Or
Denis V. That has a nice ring to it. Yeah. What is the latest? So Dune is December of 21, right?
October.
October of 21.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the latest. And I mean, I don't want you to get excited because I know how you are.
That's true. I get wound up.
But a new Dune book came out this week.
What?
So.
Have you read it yet?
No, but I may have it right over here. I'll probably start it this week. It's the first in a trilogy of books that take place 1 year before Dune. It's called Duke of Caladan. I know what you're thinking, just what we need. What happened exactly 1 year? Because there's already a prequel that takes place 10 years before.
You want to know honestly what I thought when you told me that? The very first thing that crossed through my mind?
Yeah.
Great. More movies. Like, if Dune is successful in October of 21 the way we think it's going to be, this just – and we'll do – can they do, like, a Dune trilogy and then go back and do just like Star Wars did? Like, another trilogy that starts a year before?
Well,
and then later we can do another trilogy that starts 10 years before? I mean, we can right away get 9 quality movies out of this, and we'll finish the entire run before Avatar 2.
I know. There's only, like, 21 books. It's not a big deal.
Oh my God! This is what you would call a rich, no, what do you call it? Like a rich source.
Oh yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
Yeah, forever we can be playing these movies.
I mean, please.
All right. Let's get to the news of the day. I have some exhibition news.
Okay, hit me.
It's exciting, but it's not quite exciting. It's exciting because it tells you that. Somewhere, I don't know how far out the horizon is, but somewhere on the horizon, we're going to come back. And the first step towards that was our dear friend, Governor Cuomo, the most anti-movie theater governor in all of America. Governor Cuomo announced the other day that this coming Friday, New York, the state of New York, can open theaters, but not New York City.
Okay.
So my question is this. It's a rhetorical question. My rhetorical question is this. When the counties in Pennsylvania were doing that red light, green light routine,
yeah.
And everybody was red, and then they were yellow, and then they were green, it seemed like they never announced when Lancaster County was going to go green, and then all of a sudden they were like, Lancaster County goes green tomorrow. So they're not commenting on New York City, and they're putting some very intense metrics up that need to be met in order for the theaters and bars to reopen. But I'm sure that I'm naive for thinking this, but I'm holding out hope that maybe this is coming. You know, maybe this happens, you know, in time for Thanksgiving or Christmas or January, but maybe it doesn't have to wait till 2023.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. I mean, New York City, man, that is, they had it bad, and it's so easy for New York City to backpedal. There's just so many people.
Right.
I understand why they're being careful.
No, I totally do too, and I get it, but I feel like, I don't know. I just feel like movie theaters are safer than they're giving us credit for. The rooms are gigantic. The air is circulated. Nobody's, you know, you're not in a restaurant where you're sitting across the table from somebody chatting with them. Whatever. I'm not trying to be anti-safety because I'm all about the safety. Amy and I have been working on a campaign. When I say Amy and I mean mostly Amy, has been really putting together a thoughtful, factually based, science-based, evidence-based top 10 reasons theaters are safe to come back to. Right. And Amy works in the NICU. She's very careful. She's very attuned to public safety. So she's our new chief safety officer, and she thinks it's okay to go to movies. And so therefore, I'm just counting the days. I can't wait till New York City reopens, because when New York City reopens, for all of you who are wondering, like, who cares – I know that you already know this, but I'm going to state the obvious. When New York City opens is when we can start to get really good movies back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, we're not going to see – we're going to have some exceptions. I mean, I know that Wonder Woman is still on the schedule for December 25th, and I know that there's some other decent movies, but we're not going to really be back to a normal release schedule until New York City and L.A. are back open for business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And I don't want to underplay it. I mean – Amy's a doctor. She's not just a NICU worker. She's a doctor.
Right. This is Dr. Ketchum we're talking about.
Yeah.
Dr. Feelgood Ketchum.
Yeah. I actually had a weird conversation this week, not to tangent too far, but someone I know was like, hey, all these podcasts I listen to, they're all saying movie theaters are dead.
That's awesome.
And we'll never go back to movie theaters.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Of course, these, literally every podcast the person named were all like sports podcasts. So
right.
I was like, I mean, they aren't even movie podcasts, guys.
Right.
So, yeah.
Listen, I think you hit the nail on the head a couple weeks ago. The analogy is bars. If you are dumb enough to think that movie theaters are going to just magically disappear. Now, I agree that they may change, and certainly some are going to go out of business because they won't survive the pandemic. But the landscape will change. But if you think movie theaters are going to just disappear, then you got to also be willing to say that bars are going to just disappear.
Right.
It's the perfect analogy. They're both not in a hoity-toity way, but they're both very important parts of our community, of the fabric of our of how we operate. Right. And same, I throw restaurants on that list as well. So yeah, that's great. We've been pronounced dead before. You know, VHS, Betamax, HBO, cable, home theater systems, like the beat goes on, you know, and I see that headline all the time. And people love to say that, you know, streaming this, streaming that, blah, blah, blah. We're playing a movie in a theater right now. It's currently available at home, and it's making money in the movie theater because people want to just come out.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, all right. You got any actual movie news for us here?
Anya Taylor-Joy, you might remember her from The Witch. She was recently in New Mutants, one of the big movies of this year, surprisingly.
I thought she was great in New Mutants.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, absolutely. She's going to be playing the role of Furiosa in the Mad Max prequel, Furiosa. And she's going to be joined by, Yahya Abdul-Mateen II.
I think you're overthinking that. I think it's just Yahya.
Yahya?
I think the H is silent, like Yahya.
Yahya Abdul-Mateen II and Chris Hemsworth, who are in unknown roles, who will also be cast in this movie.
Wait. So the guy's name is Yahya Abdul-Mateen II.
Yeah, the second.
I love it because that tells me that there's a Yahya Abdul-Mateen I.
The first.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real. And this guy's been in stuff. I think it's mostly been TV. I could be wrong. I saw a picture of him. He looked familiar. I'm down. I think that this cast could turn out to be really cool. I don't think there needs to be a Furiosa movie, but I am very much in the minority of people who did not like Mad Max Fury Road. But that is me.
Did you hear the headline? And I didn't even click on the story because it was so ridiculous. But did you hear the headline that the director of Mad Max had to come out and squelch some rumor that there was no script for Mad Max?
No.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. He had to come out and say that yes, there actually was a script. I read the headline on Joe Blow. I did not click on the story because it was just so ridiculous. But whoever the guy, do you remember who directed the first Mad Max? But it was somebody pretty famous, pretty mainstream director. And he came out and squelched some rumor that it was going around that the whole thing was shot with like a storyline.
George Miller.
That's who it was.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, speaking of Static Shock, Michael B. Jordan, Outlier Society, Michael B. Jordan's company called Outlier Society will produce DC's Static Shock movie. Again, I'm the one out of the loop here. Bring us up to speed on what is the Static Shock movie. This is the first I'm hearing about it.
Static Shock is a superhero, a kid who gets like electricity's abilities. It was a cartoon in the 90s and became successful, became part of the actual DC Comics in print form. A couple big things here. Static Shock is a popular character, but this will actually be, they're making a big thing here. This will be the first DC feature with a black protagonist, so they're hyping that, which I think is pretty cool. Actually, I think the character has a really cool design. He like makes like a static electricity, makes metal cling to his feet, and then he glides around in the air, which is pretty cool looking.
That is cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of cool. So I'm totally down with this. I think Static Shock is prime for a movie, even whether or not it fits into the wider DCEU. Who knows? Who cares at this point? It's such a mess.
I thought it was going to be a movie about taking your socks out of the dryer.
Well, it's just, you just walk backwards in your socks and it's and making balloons stick to your people's hair and stuff. It's, yeah.
Can we go back just a step to Yahya Abdul-Mateen second?
Yeah.
One of our producers just handed me a note here that says that Yahya is actually currently co-starring in a Netflix movie that is actually getting pretty incredible reviews. I don't even know if it might not be out yet, or maybe it's just out or whatever, but have you heard about this, The Trial of Chicago 7?
No, no.
Yeah, he co-stars Yahya and Eddie Redmayne star in it. And it looks like, yeah, it just came out on Netflix, and it's supposed to be really good. It's a look back at the 1968 Democratic National Convention. It's written by Aaron Sorkin, who you know is a pretty or it's a very political guy. Yeah. Also has Sacha Baron Cohen in, Alex Sharp, Eddie Redmayne. I don't know. It's just interesting. I love this happens to me all the time. Like you've never heard of an actor, and then you hear his name, and then all of a sudden he's in everything, or she.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Can we pedal into Sacha Baron Cohen?
I guess.
He's,
you know who he is? He's the guy I do not want to take him seriously, and yet he deserves all our respect.
Yeah, he does some really good serious stuff.
Right. The thing.
But he also does ridiculous things. Speaking of which, we got some feedback in person to me, several people saying, did you guys forget about the Borat trailer?
Isn't the Borat trailer coming online? Isn't that movie being released on Amazon Prime?
It said it's a strictly online film. And they said, well, I thought you would have talked about it.
Why would we talk about it?
I was like, and I thought you would have listened to this show and known what we do.
If you want a podcast about what's good on TV,
there's
probably other podcasts for that.
Now, I mean, we stretch it a little bit if there's, you know, if it's theaters and on demand these days, you know, but right. This was straight to on demand. So,
or we'll sometimes give a shout out to a good quality movie like the Trial of the Chicago 7. If something's on our radar, or like The Boys we've talked about in weeks past, but I don't think we need to watch every trailer for every. I watched a trailer this week for a movie that I forget what the movie was, but it was really good, or at least the trailer looked good, and I was kind of excited about it. And then at the end, it says coming to Amazon Prime.
Oh, was it that Paul Bentley movie?
Might be.
With the niece that comes to visit and finds out that he's gay.
Is that it might be.
Yeah. Oh, that looks so good. But
yeah.
Anyway, all right, Tatiana Maslany, I'm guessing that's how you say it. She denies that she's She-Hulk. We reported on this. Now, this comes after the director and Mark Ruffalo both confirmed her in the role. When contacting Marvel and Disney, IO9 got this quote back. If it's not on Marvel.com, then it's not official. I mean, the director and Mark Ruffalo were both like, yo, welcome to the show. But then she's like, oh, no, it's not real. It's just, you know, it's just a rumor, and they ran with it. It's not, you know. Sounds to me like they're just, like, trying to keep things hush-hush. And that, it, you know, the news wasn't ready to be out there or something.
You might be right, and that's probably right. But there's another alternative explanation.
Oh.
Not as exciting, but interesting. I think sometimes a story like this shows you how big these studios are and how little things are communicated until it's time to like sit in a room and read the script together. You know what I mean? Like I completely 100% believe that the director and Mark Ruffalo would not be in the loop on who's being cast as She-Hulk. As crazy as that sounds, I completely believe that they would not be in the loop on that.
You don't think the director would be?
Okay. All right. I guess the director. Yeah, you're right. All right. But Mark Ruffalo. Definitely.
Yeah, Mark Ruffalo. Okay,
no, but you're right. The director should have some input into that.
Maybe
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
Maybe it just wasn't finalized.
So what you're saying, what you're guessing, which is a way better guess than my guess, is that they're probably still negotiating the terms.
Right, right. This is not set in stone. So they're like, yeah, it's just rumor. It's not official.
Right. I will say I like their answer. If it's not on Marvel.com, then it's not official. What's up? Mm-hmm. So who clicks the button to post stuff on Marvel.com? Like, I picture some kid, you know what I mean? Like some 23-year-old guy, like, posting some stupid shit on there, be like, well, hey, man, it's on Marvel.com. What's up?
It must be real. Yeah. A disgruntled employee on his last day just throws up all the rumors.
Right. Mark Ruffalo to star as Iron Man.
Look. Jonathan Betul, Jonathan Betul revealed that he and co-writer Gary Whitta, are still hard at work on a sequel to 1984's The Last Starfighter. Now, Penn.
Yes, David.
You work in the theater business. Right?
I do. I'm a professional. I mean, at this point, yeah.
I mean, would you say that it's fairly often that people come up to you and say, what's up with The Last Starfighter? Are we ever getting a sequel, the one that we're clamoring for?
You want me to put a number to it?
Yeah.
Like the frequency with which this occurs.
Yeah. In an hourly basis.
We've been open almost 15 years, times 12 months, 365, carry the one. Closed for a couple snow days, closed for the pandemic. Email counts, like just email questions about it.
You can email, Twitter. Yeah, they work. Yeah.
Facebook questions. All right, so let me add them in. I mean, just ballparking it.
Yeah.
Just putting a, you know, round number there. It's going to be a really round number because the number is zero.
Oh my god.
I'll go a step further and whatever, podcast at penncinema.com if I don't deserve to be sitting in this chair, but I don't even remember The Last Starfighter from 1984, and I was a 13-year-old boy in 1984. I should be, I mean, if it came out in the summer.
I know that I've seen this movie, but I cannot remember for the life of me what it's about or why you would want a sequel to it. So apparently this movie was up in like rights disputes and it took them forever to get the rights back. So now that they have the rights back, they're like, let's do it. But why? Why?
Oh my gosh. The movie stars Dan Mason as Lord Krill. And the summary of the video game expert Alex Rogan, played by apparently Lance Guest.
Oh, our favorite.
Yep. Finds himself transported to another planet after conquering the Last Starfighter video game, only to find out it was just a test. He was recruited to join the best team of starfighters to defend their world from attack. And the poster looks awful.
Well, it's 80s, 1984.
Yeah. All right, anyway, so what are you saying? So this guy is still working on his sequel that nobody wants.
Yeah, they're in the midst of making this amazing sequel to The Last Starfighter.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, listen. The new James Bond movie stars Daniel Craig.
Yeah.
And the title of the movie is No Time to Die.
Right.
The film was originally slated to release in April of 2020. It was then pushed back to what, October, November, something like that.
Yeah.
And I think pushed back to November. And then was recently pushed back to April of 21.
Right.
And we recently received these new stickers that are the exact color and size of the spot on the banner that says November of 2020. And the stickers say April of 2021. And I put the sticker on the banner that's in our lobby. And I will let you know that I put it on just a hair crooked. And I put it on crooked because I thought that those of you with the keen eye would be amused to start counting how many stickers we're going to put on there. So I think a couple episodes we talked about, I said I hope they start wising up and send us new banners that say coming soon. But apparently what they're going to do is just keep printing up these stickers, because recently in an interview with the Wall Street Journal, James Bond director, whose name is Kerry Fucky You Too Manga, says that No Time to Die could be pushed back. Did you catch that director's name?
I did. It was inspirational.
Yeah.
I saw you wrote it out, and I was like, how's he going to pull this one off?
Anyway, that director said that No Time to Die could actually be pushed back again.
What?
He did say, I will give him some credit. I want to make fun of him, but before I do, I'm definitely going to make fun of him. But before I do, I want to give him credit, because his interview was 100% coherent and thoughtful, and it was clear that he was talking to the grown-ups.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like what he was saying was, yeah, we don't know what the world is going to look like in April. It's possible that we could all fall down the rabbit hole again. It's possible there could be a second wave. It's possible. And he went on to say, you know, this is just a movie. It's just entertainment. I have friends who are losing their businesses, and I have friends whose, you know, loved ones are dying. And, you know, he sort of got real pretty quickly. So I will say, you know, that's fine. But on the other hand, looking at the momentum that's happening in the movie industry, there's no way James Bond gets pushed back again, absent some major, like if AMC closes up shop, if Regal doesn't in fact reopen by April, if all these, you know, things continue to work against us, then I suppose it is possible, which is exactly what he's saying. He didn't say that he thought it would. He was just saying that, hey, technically speaking, in the world that we live in now, six months, which is when April is, 6 months from now is a lifetime. And I guess he's right. So I just thought it was interesting that he's sort of out there trying to bring, you know, a little bit of reality check to the movie industry.
You said 6 months is a lifetime. It just reminded me, I don't know if you've seen the current ongoing meme. It's like decades I've lived through, 1970, 1980, 1990. And then it says October 1st, 2020, October 5th, 2020.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, that's the news for this week. We have five good trailers. I'm sorry. Let me back that up. We have five trailers. To discuss, I don't know, four of them were okay. You wanna lead us off?
Okay, we're gonna start off. Last week we hit you with the trailer of Monster Hunter. This week, this week we have the full trailer of Monster Hunter. This movie looks exactly like what you would expect from the teaser. I don't know what to say about this movie. It could be really fun. It could be really boring. It could be really fun.
I'm on board. I think it works.
It doesn't look anything like the video game, but at some point you just have to be like, whatever. Do you want to see giant monsters on the screen?
Yes, I do. I do.
That's all you need.
And lots of them. And let me tell you this. As our great friend Hal Lord would say, let me say this about that. We're going to segue into the second trailer of the week, which was, I thought, awful and a total waste of my time. The movie's called Jiu-Jitsu, which is a video game movie that releases in theaters and also on demand on 11/20. I'd like to take this opportunity, and I have a coherent point to make, but before I do, I want to take this opportunity to take back something I said on this show last week or the week before. I think I was joking around, right? And I was like, if you have some duping movie you're almost done with, let me know, because I'll definitely play it, blah, 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 right? Which I'm pretty sure that's what I sound like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, well, that was, yeah.
Exactly. So I would like to take that back, because I will not be playing Jiu-Jitsu. And I skipped Kid Detective this week, and I skipped a bunch of titles, because as I said to Drew earlier last week when I was booking movies for this current weekend, I said, I'm just sick and tired of booking movies that gross like $18 over a 3-day weekend, which is what I think Jiu-Jitsu is going to gross in theaters. But anyway, here's my actual point. Monster Hunter and Jiu-Jitsu, is it fair to say they're both quote unquote video game movies?
I don't know about Jiu-Jitsu being based off a video game.
Okay, well, let's just pretend that it is, because okay. Jiu-Jitsu looks like you're watching somebody play a video game.
Yeah.
It looks like you're watching somebody play a video game, and they have Keanu Reeves in it for about 5 minutes, and you can tell it's 5 minutes because, first of all, they're using his name to promote the movie.
Oh, it's not Keanu Reeves. It's better than that.
Oh, who is it?
Perhaps you know him as Nicolai Cage.
Oh, that's right. I'm so sorry. Yes. Thank you for correcting me. I'm so sorry. Even better. They got the cage in, but you can tell that he's not really in the movie, because when they're listing all the stars, they list all these people you've never heard of, and then at the end it says, and Nicolas Cage. Which always means he's going to be like on screen for like 5 minutes.
They got him for 2 days.
Right.
Yeah.
Paid him $1 million. So Monster Hunter, on the other hand, is based on a video game, but I think looks like, I'm not saying it's my favorite movie, but it looks like it's going to be a good movie, like a exciting action adventure. You got to fight these gigantic monsters, and they're in the desert, and this is where the beta troop disappeared from, and something like that. I don't know.
I'm just in it for the monsters. They look really cool.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You want to get nerdy for a second?
Yeah.
All right. So there was a big backlash on the internet because in one of the posters, Mila Jovovich is running towards the Rathalos, which is a type of one of the monsters, with blades that are on fire. And people were upset because Rathalos is not weak against fire. He's strong against fire, so those blades wouldn't hurt him.
I love it.
Yeah, anyway, I was like, I cannot believe people.
This is going to be a fun movie to stand in the lobby after opening night.
Just see people's reactions.
Watch people geeking out.
Yeah.
Another movie that had an interesting trailer. The movie looks really good. The movie is called 9 Days, and it's about these potential souls.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's reincarnation or if they're just potential souls in general,
right? And they go through an interview process to apply to have a human life.
Yeah.
And that interview process, they reveal in the trailer, takes 9 days.
And it's over those 9 days, their emotions and their senses will get turned up really high to see how they react to situations. And then if they pass the 9-day period, they'll be born. That's what it seems. They're being evaluated by a person who's not God, but they're like, are you God or something? And he's like, no, I'm just a cog in the system or something like that.
Mm.
This is my trailer of the week.
Yeah?
Yeah. I really liked this trailer a lot. I was like, I want to see this movie. Benedict Wong's in it. Zazie Beetz, some other people. It looks it's one of those semi-indie-ish films that just like, piqued my interest. It's probably going to be super slow, super dramatic, and people are going to be like, oh, it didn't really go anywhere. The pacing was bad. But like, I think this looks like a movie you could really sit down and think about.
Do you think it's going to be you think it's going to be heavy?
Probably.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a little anxious about whether it's going to be too depressing
too
for
depressing.
Me.
Depressing, yeah. Well, there's the scene where they're at dinner, and then one guy's like, people get killed all the time, and they're like, why are you focusing on this? And he's like, why are you not?
Oh. The thing that I got from the trailer was, apparently we should all be grateful because our soul, apparently since we're out here living lives as humans, apparently passed the 9-day test,
right.
You know, and here we are. You know, so live your best life.
Right. Yeah. Speaking of living your best life, Amonet Trailer 2 hit. What did you think of this trailer? I think the first trailer is better as a trailer. However, I think trailer two showed a lot more of the emotions to expect out of the movie.
I don't know if you remember this, but back in March, the whole world went on quarantine.
Whoa.
Right?
That happened?
And yeah.
Okay.
And everybody except you had to stay home and watch Netflix.
Whoa, whoa, I stayed home for like 4 months.
No, but you didn't go home right away. Remember?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, your company was one of the late closures, if I remember correctly. Maybe I'm wrong, but I remember a couple weeks there.
Yep.
Or maybe time was funny. But anyway, my point is, early in the quarantine, when we were hardcore, like not leaving the house, I watched a movie, and I forget if it was Netflix or Prime or Hulu or whatever, but I remember talking about it on the podcast, and it was a beautiful movie called Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Do you remember me talking about it?
Yeah.
Vaguely.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful movie. I highly recommend it. My problem with Ammonite is that, and I'm playing it. It's from Neon. It opens in November. I booked it at Penn Cinema, all three locations. It's going to be a beautiful movie. I can't wait to see it. But my problem with Ammonite is it looks exactly like Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Like, it's a period piece set on like a remote coast. One of them is an island. One of them is an ocean. There's all this stuff. There's these two women who are creative in their own rights, and they fall in love or have some sort of forbidden romance, and romance doesn't even do it justice, because I know there's more to it than that. So I think it's just a little, they're going to need to differentiate this movie. And I guess the cast with Kate Winslet, who, by the way, has apparently grown, and Saoirse Ronan.
What? She's apparently grown? What does that mean?
That's the wrong word. The right word would be aged.
Okay. All right. Yes.
She has aged. She has not retained her rugged young looks like you and me.
He's trying to be polite about it, but it was like, what?
She looks old. Kate Winslet, for the first time, and I know it's makeup or whatever, and she's playing a character, but she looks like an old lady.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, I thought this was a good trailer. It's intriguing. The movie looks good. It's a period piece. I know that our boy, Mr. Gobble, will not be watching this movie.
Okay. All right. Now, this next movie is about, like, me getting ready for Thanksgiving dinner, or that's what I thought, right?
Empty Man?
Empty Man. I'm ready.
Wait, are you one of those guys who starves themselves before Thanksgiving?
Oh, no, that's the foolish way to do it, man.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Okay, good.
Yeah,
good.
Your stomach shrinks, and then you can't handle it.
No, you don't. Yeah. You know, that's all wrong. That's all backwards. We'll talk about that when we get closer to Thanksgiving. Right. Okay, the last trailer of the week is Empty Man. This is a horror movie. It looks scary as hell. It opens on Friday at all Penn Cinema locations. I don't have a whole lot to say about it, except that I thought it was a great trailer. And if you're into horror movies, I think this is going to be a winner for you. But I agree with you. 9 days was my trailer of the week.
Nice. Yeah, Empty Man looks spooky. Good horror, not my thing, but I can definitely see people seeing this movie. So.
All right. The movie we review this week stars Bill Murray and
Rashida Jones.
Rashida Jones. And the movie is called On the Rocks. And I can't wait to hear what you thought about it, because I loved it.
Okay, I thought you were going to say I didn't see it. yeah, I absolutely love this movie. Here's the thing about this film. It's about a very depressing situation where someone is – not depressing, but sad situation where someone suspects their spouse of adultery.
Infidelity, if you will.
Yeah. And but I had a smile on my face throughout the whole film, pretty much. It's presented in a very lighthearted is the wrong way, but it was very endearing to watch the relationship between a semi-estranged father and his grown daughter, and the way that he kind of like tries his best to be a part of her life and tries to help solve this problem while also fully acknowledging that he was the same issue. You know, he cheated on his wife and wound up having to leave the family. And it's just like, it's very endearing to see them come together. And like, he's just constantly like, let's go, come on, like, let's shake up your life. You know, let's go do this thing right now. Let's take you out for your dinner right now for your birthday. And she's like, I can't, I have a family. And it's constantly a back and forth between like her responsibilities versus this, like wanting to deal with an issue and her father, like coming in and trying to take her. I just thought it was really great. It semi-predictable towards the end, but you know, towards the end, you find that her father really was just wanted to spend time with her and was using it as an excuse. But, and she's like, you know, I can't believe I even talked to you. If you want to spend time with me, why'd you have to, you know, make my life miserable? And his response is just, he used to be so fun. You know, it just, I just really, really, really like this movie.
The movie was an absolute joy to behold, but the story was stressful, and I think that you sort of hit the nail on the head. Like somehow, when you explain to people the premise of the movie, it's actually a pretty depressing premise. And the father, played by Bill Murray, apparently has no, or you know, some hard to find redeeming qualities, because everything he does is selfish, has always been selfish his entire life, you know, and it continues throughout the movie. And yet, you know, as the two of them reconnect, or not that they were ever disconnected, but as the two of them go through this adventure to sort of sort things out, you do realize that behind the selfishness is, you know, a loneliness and a desire to be connected with his daughter, who he obviously loves. I thought that the thing about this movie is that the acting in this movie was off the charts good.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Bill Murray was amazing. We know Rashida Jones is amazing, and it's basically the two of them. But even the supporting actors were, you know, really solid. I loved Bill Murray's character. Like, I absolutely fell in love with him. But I could also relate to the husband, who, even though, now we'll put a spoiler in here, but it turns out that the husband is not cheating on her.
Right.
But even though it turns out he's not cheating on her, I wish the movie had delved into a little bit more of like his behaviors led his wife, his, you know, presumably best friend, to be raising questions about where he's choosing to spend his time.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, okay, so you weren't cheating on her, but you absolutely play a part in the fact that your marriage is, you know, that your wife is questioning your marriage. And the movie, I don't think, really addressed that a whole lot.
No. I mean, at the end, when everything's wrapping up, you kind of get the hint that maybe he's decided to spend more time at home.
Right.
With the family. Like, he's making changes in his
right.
ways. And I think it's an issue that I'm sure many families with when they're starting a business or having a very business-minded partner can fall into, where they are so focused on doing this thing to provide for their family that many a times it comes in the way of the one thing they're doing it for.
Right.
Their family.
Yeah.
You know, and they're so deep in doing what they need to do that they just can't, they don't realize that it's having that effect on others.
So the movie you put that perfectly, and the movie doesn't really address that. But with that being said, I still thought the movie was amazing. I have a particular line, my favorite part of the whole movie. What was your favorite part of the movie? Does one part stand out?
Yeah, one part that I keep coming back to is when they're still on, it's before they have a breakdown of their relationship, the Rashida Jones and Bill Murray, and they're in Mexico, and she's basically put everything on the line to try and figure out if her husband's cheating. And she's out there, and she has a very serious conversation with her father about, why did you cheat? Like,
right.
to us, you just left. We didn't know this woman was in our life. And he, all throughout the movie, he's always saying such, like, we meet the mother, and she has not really anything good to say about him. But we meet him, and all he does is several times he brings up about how much her mother meant the world to him, and how she was the perfect woman to him. And
right.
even though he loves all these women, and he goes on to say, he's like, in the beginning, your mother was this ray of sunshine, and she shined on me all the time. And it was amazing. And he's like, and then we had the two kids, and her ray of sunshine shone on you, and it didn't show on me anymore. And then someone came along and shined their light, and I didn't know I didn't know how to respond to it. And I just wanted that. And he fell into it. And it's like a very honest look at, why that can happen. And, if you don't communicate, it can become, word? It can become, something that you might fall victim to.
Yeah.
Or yeah. A choice you might make.
So. Well, that was clearly the turning point for the movie. That was sort of his characters coming to Jesus type of thing.
Right.
My favorite line in the movie is when he gets pulled over by the cops and then he says, "Are you Tommy's boy?" And it turns out that the arresting officer is the son of some guy that Bill Murray was tight with, and Bill Murray was also tight with the officer's grandfather and all this kind of stuff. Not only does he talk himself out of a ticket for having just run a red light, he also gets the two cops to push the car because the starter had died. So you have to push this car. Anybody who drives an old stick shift, like my first car was a 1970 Subaru, we used to have to do the same thing sometimes. And push the car to get it to start, pop the clutch, and you start it in second gear. And so they do that. The cops push him off, and off he goes. And the daughter just looks at Bill Murray and says, "It must be so nice to be you." And then Bill Murray looks at her and goes, "I wouldn't have it any other way." I thought that was just the perfect line delivered perfectly.
Now here's my question about that scene. Did you think that he knew his dad? Because I read it as them showing about how good he was at BSing.
Oh, I took it, yeah.
He just, "Oh, your dad's Tom. You're Tom's kid? Oh, yeah." And then he just guessed, well, if there's one Tom, he's probably Tom Senior. Typical New York Italian cop family. Or maybe Irish, I don't know, but
Irish.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't take it that way, but that's an interesting way of looking at it. That could be it.
Because he doesn't really give any specifics. He works very much like a fortune teller. Do you guys still go up north on the holidays? Like no specific. And it's like, oh yeah, right. When we can.
Right.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. I never thought of that, but yeah, you might be onto something there.
This was the most filled theater that I've been to since the reopening.
Mm.
So a lot of people were out for this one.
Yeah. Yeah. The movie, the first couple of days that we had it, it did not do any business. And obviously it just took a little while because now it's doing pretty stable. I mean, nothing, it's not setting the world on fire, but you're absolutely right. People are coming out. Yeah. People are coming out for it.
Cool. All right. Let's move on to our listeners' notes, questions, lists, and prophecies. I don't know. I just had the last one in. So Encyclopedia Brown comes at us. He says, "Since it's that time of year, I don't expect a top 10 from you guys, but maybe a top 3 Halloween movies. Spooky films." So he says, number 1, Friday the 13th, the 1980 version. The Thing, the 1982 version. Hatchet, Trick or Treat. The Blob, Brain Scan. Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 2003. Halloween H2O. And Freddy vs. Jason. That's Encyclopedia Brown's top 3 Halloween films. Some of these I didn't even know were movies.
Did you say number 10, Behind 10. The Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon?
Oh, I missed that one. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so that was his top 10. I'll give you my top 3.
Okay.
Now, the first one, I'm going to agree with Jason and say Friday the 13th, 1980. That's a classic. That's all time. The second two, I'm going to depart a little bit because honestly, once you're into that genre, and I hate to say it because it's such a cliche, but for me, so many of them just start to run together. Okay. You know what I mean? Like, I start to forget, and I start to, you know, things get mixed up, and I start, whatever. So my number one would be Friday the 13th. Then I'm going, I know this isn't a Halloween movie, but I'm going to The Shining.
Okay, yeah.
For a horror movie, which, by the way, is playing at Penn Cinema. So Friday the 13th, The Shining, and then I'll go, this isn't, you know, scary per se, but I'll go to Beetlejuice.
Oh, okay.
Right. Beetlejuice also coming to Penn Cinema, opening on Friday the 23rd and playing all week. But that's not why I said it. Those are my three quote-unquote Halloween, scary, whatever you want to call it. Friday the 13th, The Shining, and Beetlejuice.
Here's my question. Was there a scary movie that terrified you as a kid that you still won't watch as an adult?
Yes and no. I know the movie you're thinking of for me would be The Shining.
Okay. All right.
But I would enjoy watching it as an adult. I haven't sat down and watched it in a couple of years, but I do really enjoy it. There was a movie that came out that was not a horror movie. There was a movie called My Bodyguard. It came out in the early 80s. I don't know if you remember this one. And it was so real. It was so sort of real to life. It scared me, and I've never watched it since.
Two for me, Little Monsters. I still won't watch that. But the one that I was thinking of originally when I asked this question was the Ernest Halloween movie, where the little kids get turned into to wooden dolls and put into the tree in little compartments. We would watch that all the time, but it was so scary. So top three horror, I'm with The Ring, The Grudge. Shoot. I don't know if I have a third. Oh, Let the Right One In.
Oh, wow.
I like that one a lot.
I haven't thought about that one in 16 years, yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So, all right.
All right.
What are you reading? What are you watching? What are you doing this week?
I've been reading.
Ooh. Dune?
You may, our avid listeners who pay close attention may recall that some months back, I was presented with a book by my beloved papa, who gave me a book called The Best Movie Year Ever. I'm just now opening it, and now I can't put it down. This is an incredibly well-written and easy-to-read book. I feel like if you and I sat down and wrote a book together, this would be it. Like, the tone, the flow, like, it's very knowledgeable, but also not at all like hoity-toity or anything like that. But it's all about the year 1999.
Oh.
And it's, I mean, so just to recap, you're talking about The Matrix, Office Space, Pulp Fiction. There's a bunch, and you really sort of don't remember until you read this book. First of all, how many of those movies all came out in the same year? And then second of all, how many of them like reflect really interesting critical turning points in the world? All these movies came out just months before Y2K, just as an example. So anyway, it's a fascinating book with a lot of information, you know, about each movie, you know, that's really, you know, delves into each one of those movies through a consistent thread of the year. So I've been reading that and enjoying it. I've also been listening to you guys who told me that The Boys is really good. So I'm most of the way through season one, really enjoying it. And I'm really enjoying it. And I'm actually excited because didn't you guys all tell me that season two is even better?
Yeah. I like season two a lot. Yeah.
So I'm working through that, really enjoying that. And then, I got something to say here.
Okay, I'm ready.
I don't want to, like, be that guy. But
you kind of are.
But I kind of am.
I
went to Penn Cinema and arranged for a private screening of Honest Thief.
Oh.
Starring Liam Neeson.
The man who can't fail.
The man who can't fail. Now, let me pull up my review that I texted to my friend after the movie, because it's a pretty much captures everything. Okay, my review of Honest Thief is as follows. There's nothing good about this movie. The best part of the movie was the popcorn that I ate. I really love that Penn Cinema popcorn. The rich, buttery taste, I just can't stop eating it. It was delicious. And I even mixed in some goobers, which was extra special. The only reason why I stayed to the end of this film is because the power reclining chair that I was sitting in was so comfortable, and I was getting a lot of work done on my phone. So, ..
Wow, it's killer review.
Yeah, so I mean, if you're a good enough friend to be listening to the Penn Cinema podcast and you're, God forbid, still listening to this episode 91 an hour into it, now, I want to say, then you deserve to know, save your money, don't go see Honest Thief. I'm just trying to be honest. I'm just trying to be upfront. You know what this movie was like all kidding aside? This was this should have been a TV movie released in the 1980s.
Ouch.
Like, really. It's really, that's the level of everything about it. Oof. There was nothing good about it. Even, like, the chase scenes, the plot was, everything was cliche. There were some bright points. The detective that didn't get killed right away, he was good. Liam Neeson played Liam Neeson, whatever. But what's interesting is, a friend of mine, who conveniently doesn't listen to the Penn Cinema podcast, he doesn't think I see any movies ever.
What?
Which is fine. All right, right. So, which is fine, except now he texts me his movie reviews. Every time he sees a movie, he texts me whether or not it's good so that I'm in the know. So he texts me this. This is his review of Honest Thief. The Liam Neeson movie is good. Typical, but good. Was it though? Yeah. So anyway, what about you? What have you been watching and reading?
So I didn't watch a whole lot this week. I think I finished The Boys. I said I was going to do that last week after the show was over. And I really like the ending of season two. I'm not going to talk about it since you're watching it.
But good.
I really like the ending of season two. I got a lot of things I'm going to watch this week. I picked up the Blu-rays for Picard, so I'm going to rewatch Picard. I am this close, and
wait, how close?
This close. It's pretty close. I mean, it might even happen today.
Whoa!
I don't want to do it. This close, but I really want to watch Star Trek Discovery. And the new season just started, and I'll have to subscribe to CBS All Access, and I can't. I don't know, man.
Oh my god! I can just see the pain. I can see that you're suffering.
And the full season of Star Trek Lower Decks is done, so I could watch that too. So it wouldn't be just like,
my friend, you're just suffering.
And I don't want to give them my money, but I might do it for 2 months so that I can watch this show. Otherwise, I have to wait a year.
And oh my god!
I don't have anyone to leech off of this year, so it's a hard knock life. But
you know what? Go ahead.
Okay, no. I was going to say I did watch Coco, and I really enjoyed it.
Did you watch that at home or at Penn Cinema?
I watched it at home. I watched it last night with a group of friends. We had a spooky movie night, but then too many people didn't like spooky movies, so we watched Coco.
Yeah, I really enjoyed Coco. We're playing it at the theater this week, and I was kind of thinking, like, I do want to, like, sit in the theater and watch it on, because it's a beautiful movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's just beautiful.
I regret sleeping on it for so long. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. You were describing to our listeners who listen to the podcast how close you are, and you were doing so by holding up your fingers and illustrating for our listeners so they could see how close you are to watching Picard or whatever. What was the show?
Subscribing to CBS All Access.
Right, CBS All Access. So that reminded me that I wanted to tell our listeners, in case they wondered, that because I was really – I want to do right by our listeners. So I did, in fact, shave and brush my teeth for the episode today so as to not offend our podcast listeners. And I'll just say this. You're welcome.
We do not deserve such things, but
hey, listen,
every week, you know.
Listen, I brush my teeth once a week, whether they need them or not.
I couldn't even bother to brush my hair.
That's why God invented baseball hats, David.
That's where you got away with it. I figured, I'll put the headphones on, he won't even notice.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do next week?
I don't know.
Honestly, I mean, off the plate.
So here's what we have. My vote, if you're willing, my vote would be Monsters Incorporated.
Really?
It's a fun kids movie. Either that or go horror and watch Empty Man. Our other choices would be, we have a romantic, like a drama based on a romance novel called After We Collided, which, by the way, I never heard of it. I put tickets on sale, and it's already like far and away the number one movie coming out this week.
Wow.
We're also playing It, Casper, and Beetlejuice. I'd be up for any of those titles, but I'm not up for reviewing Honest Thief, unless you want to watch it, and then we can just make fun of it next week.
Well, now I'm looking at, I went to this website.
Oh, God.
PennCinema.com.
Oh, that's great. That's my favorite website.
It's a great site. And yeah. I'm looking at movies playing next week, right?
Yeah. Yeah, what do you see?
Yellow Rose.
No, that's not going to be playing next week.
What? This is set. I'm looking at Wednesday, October 21st. Where do I need to go? Thursday?
Friday, October 23rd.
Okay. All right. That's the big.
All right. And Yellow Rose is not going to survive the Thursday turnover. Unless you want to, if you want to watch Yellow Rose, I'll watch it before it leaves. But
I don't know. Possessor's still there.
Oh, yeah. Let's watch Possessor.
Okay.
That's the movie that Encyclopedia Brown, Jason told me was so gory that he had to look away.
Yeah. He sent me a message after last week's episode. He said, hey, look, it's not horror. It's just disturbing. And I
thought, my God.
He said,
all right,
he said I could handle it. So.
Okay. Oh, I'm scared now. I'm already scared. I'm nervous. All right.
Yeah. All right. This is an hour and 42 minutes of regret.
You know what this is? I feel like I'm on the uptick of like the roller coaster. Like you're waiting in line and then you get in the damn thing and they close the gate down on you and they're like, tick, 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 tick.
I made a mistake. Right.
Something went very wrong. Something went terribly wrong. Yeah, that's exactly how I feel right now. Like I'm already gripped with regret.
All right. So Possessor it is. Well, that's our show. Look, if you want to be a part of the show, number one way you can do it, send us an email, podcast@penncinema.com. We'll read it. We'll probably respond. And we'll talk about it on the show. I can guarantee you that much.
And with any luck, we'll make fun of you.
What else more can you ask for? Right? But if you want to help the show, and I know so many people are like, how can I help?
Right.
There's a really great way you can do that. And what is that, Penn?
Tell a friend.
Yeah.
Tell a friend.
Yeah. Have you ever seen one of those movies where people are singing and dancing in the street? It always starts with someone opening their window and like starting to sing out the window. Well, all you have to do is open your window and be like, listen to the Penn Cinema podcast. And I guarantee you, your whole neighborhood will be like dancing in the street and doing a jive, you know, 6 feet apart.
Have you heard what the new thing is?
What's that?
No, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but like seriously, have you heard this new trend that everybody's doing?
Like yelling or blowing horns? At like
no. It has nothing to do with that. Oh. They're taking sidewalk chalk and writing, listen to the Penn Cinema podcast in front of their houses, like on their streets and on the sidewalk. It's gripping the nation is what it is.
Yeah, and if you see that, you need to take a picture next to it. Send it to us.
If you write, listen to the Penn Cinema podcast on your driveway or the street in front of your house and email us a picture, I will send you two passes to see any movie you want at Penn Cinema, any of the locations.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
That's a true story right there. And if you're still listening to this, the end of episode 91, even after we already started wrapping up, God bless you.
Hey, who's ready for another quick 89 episodes?
Right. Yeah, now we start doing – now the rest of the episodes from here on out, we're going to be counting down.
All right. Well, once again, for the Penn Cinema Podcast, I'm David Moulton.
And I'm Penn Ketchum.
Take care.
Take care and party on.
Thanks for joining us this episode. Our hosts would love to hear from you. To contact the show with your thoughts and reviews, email podcast@penncinema.com. This podcast is a production of Penn Cinema. Escape to the movies at Penn Cinema, featuring crisp digital projection, killer sound, reserved seating, and premium power recliners. With locations in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Wilmington, Delaware, and Huntington Valley, Pennsylvania. Showtimes and tickets available at www.penncinema.com.